Welcome back, everyone, to week five of the Big Sky Podcast Network Power Rankings. I'm your host, Brian Marceau. You guys know the drill. Show's presented by Snake River Stampede Canadian Whiskey. Our power rankings rank the teams 12 through 1 in the Big Sky Conference. Our voters are a combination of Big Sky Podcast Network podcasters, guys like me, Dallas Hammer, Mike Nugent from Grizz Fan. We have Big Sky beat reporters from across the region. We also have a handful of dudes who just know pretty well like what the Big Sky Conference landscape looks like. You put that together, we have our Big Sky Conference power ranking pool. The point of the show is to talk about each team. So once I go over what the position are, I'm not really going to spend a lot of time haggling about where a team should be. It's just, hey, where were they? What did they do? So that's the drill, guys. We're going to start at the bottom. And honestly, we're going to fly through talking about Cal Poly. Cal Poly is number 12. We're closing in on the point, you know, almost halfway through the season. Five games have been played for each team. It's an 11-game season. Our sample size is starting to become a little more helpful, especially with the Big Sky Conference games themselves. And look, dudes, Cal Poly is just bad. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time here. But look, Cal Poly hosts UC Davis without Sam Heward. Sam Heward, starting quarterback for Cal Poly, he's out due to a concussion sustained against Portland State last week. That's why Sam Heward left the game. That's kind of the end of the intrigue talking about Cal Poly. The Mustangs go down 31-13. Bo Kelly started at quarterback. I guess maybe a little intrigue. Last year's week one starter, Jaden Jones, who went out with a blown knee during the 2022 season, who had looked kind of promising. He's just number three. So his rehab from coming back from the blown knee last year, he's just not up to the level of being a even second stringer at Cal Poly. So that's what we get. Bo Kelly goes 19 of 37 for 191 yards and one touchdown. Of course, Cal Poly cannot run whatsoever. Yes, sacks took some yards away, but the team rushed 26 times for 14 yards and a touchdown. Maybe I should celebrate a monumental rushing touchdown for the Mustangs. Troy Fletcher, 7 carries, 31 yards, and the aforementioned touchdown. Defensively, we know Cal Poly can stop virtually no one. Yardage-wise, the Mustangs were more than doubled up by the Aggies. Cal Poly surrenders 430 yards, accrues 211 yards on the game. And Cal Poly 3 turnovers to UC Davis having 1 turnover on a lost fumble. So there you go. It was a blowout. Probably could have been worse. Here's the thing on Cal Poly. They can't stop anyone whatsoever defensively. The Mustangs have to be able to put points on the board and they can't run. The only way they're going to do that is through the air. And there's just no way that without their starting quarterback, Sam Heward, or if Jaden Jones isn't healthy enough to be what he looked like last year, the Cal Poly is just going to beat no one. There's not much else to me to understand about Cal Poly. Martin in the comments section saying, duster time. Cole Barrichoa, forgive me, maybe the bottom group should be called the duster teams. Not an awful call, and we're done talking about Cal Poly. Moving on, number 11, Northern Colorado had easily their best showing of the 2023 season. Was not remotely close. The Bears, honestly heartbreaking if you're a Bears fan. Northern Colorado led for a majority of the game, hosting Weber State. And the Bears found a way to lose, which, you know, hey, I'm stealing from Ben Schlager online right now. Bad teams find a way to lose. And that's what Northern Colorado did. Jacob Sermon throws a game-winning touchdown in the fourth quarter to Weber State, 40-yard touchdown, 40-yard pick six from Winston Reed of the Wildcats. That's what broke the 28-21 tie. That was with a minute 46 left in the fourth quarter. Otherwise, if you look at the flow of the game, Northern Colorado led at the end of the second quarter. The Bears led at the end of the third quarter. Still, they're up 21-7 at half. It's still 21-7 at the end of the third. Weber State scores 21 of their 28 points in the fourth quarter, just to come apart in the fourth quarter for the Bears. Looking at box score, Jacob Sermon easily had his best game of the day, except the dude threw three picks. So there you go. That's how Northern Colorado squanders this game. Not only did Jacob Sermon throw the game-winning touchdown to the wrong team, but also threw three picks on the day. Went 28-42 overall for 287 yards, did throw two touchdowns. David Afari, running back for Northern Colorado, 12 rushes for 63 yards. He's a pretty athletic running back. He would start not at every Big Sky team, but he'd start at a decent amount of Big Sky schools. So he's one of the weapons Northern Colorado has. And I guess that's what we're looking at this point for Northern Colorado is what's their route to winning? Because before heading into this game, Northern Colorado truly looked like they just could not do anything. We in four losses, including FCS losses at Abilene Christian, hosting Incarnate Word, and then Idaho State week one of Big Sky play. Northern Colorado just didn't look like they were particularly effective in any facet, offensively or defensively. And if you have no weapons or no relative strength that you seem to be able to rely on, you know, to build wins, I don't know how you get wins. And Northern Colorado schedule from here on, Cal Poly on October 21st looks like the next and maybe only winnable game for the Bears. But hey, this was a good showing, forcing the Bears also did force turnovers of their own, picked off Kylan Weiser of Weber State three times. So they're little bit of muscle shown on the Bears defensively, as well as, you know, a little bit more offensive prowess. The Bears outgained Weber State. I'm pretty sure, not going to go through every box score, I'm pretty sure this is the first game Northern Colorado outgained their opponent, but three turnovers, man. The turnover battle margin was even in this game. Both teams' quarterbacks threw three picks, but Northern Colorado doesn't have the margin of error to not capitalize on weeks they throw, on weeks that they force multiple turnovers. This is a game that if Northern Colorado is going to pick up some wins, they absolutely had to. What you're saying, if you're a Bears fan, is this was the best showing Northern Colorado's had so far, a game they probably should have won based off the turnovers. So that's your moral victory. But that's also why the Bears are still at number 11, in spite of a handful of things really working out in their way and the Bears looking better. They still wind up on the wrong side of the win-loss column here. So Colorado, 0-5 on the season. Cal Poly before them does have two wins, but only one's a D1 win. So anyway, between the bottom two teams, we have one D1 win. Moving on to number 10. Now, this to me is another relatively interesting one. Idaho State, they travel to Missoula. They were supposed to be the homecoming cannon fodder for the Grizzlies. And I just talked about a game that a bottom team feels like they probably should have won. Idaho State has a reasonable shot to say the exact same thing. Look, this was tight in Missoula, wire to wire. Idaho State does not pull it out. They lose 28-20, but look, solid showing for Idaho State. Say what you want about Montana, but Idaho State coming off their win against Northern Colorado, no one saw the game against Northern Colorado and thought, okay, Idaho State's the top half of the league Big Sky team. So on the road against the middle of the pack-ish Grizzlies team, that would have been a huge win for Idaho State. But the tail of the tape here is, again, this was pretty close wire to wire, 7-7 at halftime. Idaho State trailed 21-14 at the start of the fourth quarter, ends up finishing 28-20. So look, very, like I said, pretty close overall. I mean, this game was a 1-point game in the fourth quarter when Idaho State quarterback Jordan Cook threw a 6-yard touchdown pass to Cyrus Wallace. There's 14 minutes, 11 seconds left in the game. Idaho State is down 20-21 at that point. Just do have to bring this up. Missed extra point obviously mattered for Idaho State here. The missed extra point came after third quarter touchdown. The missed extra point came after the Cyrus Wallace touchdown. Tie game might have been a bigger deal for Idaho State. But anyway, Montana gets a touchdown with 7 minutes, 37 seconds left from the Idaho State. And Jordan Cook, now this is a surprise, Jordan Cook played the entire game at quarterback. And for every game this season, Jordan Cook and Hunter Hayes had split some reps. And yep, it was the Jordan Cook show. He goes 31-47, 289 yards, three touchdowns and two picks. Cook's a young dude. He's got a lot of arm talent. He's learning on the fly. Good showing overall for Idaho State on the ground. Now, Hunter Hayes was not in, and Hunter Hayes as a backup quarterback is the rushing threat for Idaho State. In his absence, Jordan Cook is the leading rusher for Idaho State, five rushes for 22 yards. Keep in mind, sacks count there too. Otherwise, leading non-quarterback rusher is Soja Gesu, who I guarantee I butchered the dude's name, 3 carries for 11 yards. But that's what Idaho State does. They spread the field, short passes replace runs, but they don't just throw short passes. Idaho State, again, they're fun. If you have not seen at least one Idaho State quarter this year, do yourself a favor and watch them. I think they're worthwhile. In the comment section, we have Captain 58. Pauly is the new bottom feeder. This is the new bottom of the duster teams. If you are a listener, you might not know what they're talking about. But if you're a viewer, you can see that beautiful duster over my left shoulder. We've had some people notice it. And once people observe the background duster, it's essentially a co-host. McLean Westbrook, our man running Jungle Land, says Calvin Pitcher and Coach Hawkins, both emotional postgame, said they should have won if it wasn't for self-imposed mistakes. Pitcher says ISU can compete with any team in the conference. And McLean Westbrook, whether you believe Pitcher or not, that's the most confidence we've seen out of the Bengals in years. Eric Stang, if ISU's Uncle Rico played a little better, could have been a W. ISU looking intriguing. McLean Westbrook, definitely think ISU could pick up another win or two this year. We'll get to the schedule in a moment. Next week, Idaho State for sure is not going to pick up a loss because they're one of 6 teams on bye in the Big Sky Conference. But I think it's fair to say Idaho State is playing with a confidence that was not present last year. From what I watched of Idaho State, Montana, if you turn the resolution to black and white and could not tell which uniforms each team had, by play calling, you could tell who Idaho State was and who Montana was. But by talent, there wasn't. Idaho State looked like they were an okay matchup for Montana. This Idaho State team, they're going to get outclassed by Idaho. They're going to get outclassed by Montana State, sure. But of the bottom teams, Idaho State feels like they're easily trending furthest in the positive direction. Cody Hawkins seems like the right hire at the right time. So maybe ISU fans should be sending thank you cards to Charlie Ragel for bailing when he did, because this team, Idaho State right now looks like they would beat the hell out of Idaho State 2020. So look, they're still bottom third-ish of the conference team, but I think they're easily the most concerning bottom 3 or 4 team that, you know, like, hey, Idaho plays Idaho State last week of the season. I would be much more concerned about Idaho State pulling an upset than Cal Poly or Northern Colorado. So Idaho State has some stuff moving in the right direction, a little bit more to just dissect the box score. The Bengals gave up 394 yards to one of the most anemic offenses in the Big Sky. So, look, part of your concern for ISU in getting those wins is, look, relative weaknesses defensively. It's just going to take time for Idaho State to get stronger on that side of the ball. But passing offense is looking solid. It's not early on. It looked like Idaho State was against San Diego State. Idaho State looked a little bit, I don't know, like they caught the Aztecs off guard. And then for the next 2 weeks of out-of-conference play, Idaho State looked a little bit underwhelming, but a big win over fellow bottom feeder Northern Colorado last week. And then this outing, if I'm a Bengal fan, I feel okay. Number 10, not a terrible place to be. Big issue for Idaho State is, like, they lost turnover margin 2-0 on the picks. So there you go, man. If Idaho State doesn't throw 2 picks, then Bengals probably win this game. Moving on to number 9. Before we get to number 9, got to hear about show sponsor Snake River Stampede Canadian Whiskey. Guys, if you haven't tried Snake River Stampede, you have to for tailgating. There's 2 options. Both of them are fantastic buys in Idaho State liquor stores. You have Snake River Stampede, double barrel finish, first fill bourbons as the initial, and then finished in Oloroso sherry casks, $25.95 for a fifth. If you want to buy, something just a teeny bit nicer, get the Snake River 1915 small batch. It's aged an additional 2 years. Its double barrel finish is first fill bourbons and then former Canadian rye whiskey casks. Either one, you can't possibly go wrong. They're of the Canadian whiskeys you're going to buy in Idaho State liquor stores. Those are number 1 and number 2, just depending on what you want to prioritize. But there isn't much discussion about who 1 and 2 are. Give Snake River Stampede a try. Number 9, top 5 Portland State. And man, Portland State kept the game with Montana State closer than I would have liked, because the biggest story I'm going to have for Portland State for a long time is that it's important that Portland State not actually crash the top 5 of the Big Sky Conference, because they cannot ruin the top 5 joke. But they didn't, so I get to exhale. This game at Montana State, the Vikings go down 38-22. probably could have been, look, Montana State could have won this by a little bit more. But hey, at the end of the first half, it's 14-17. So a great half showing for Portland State. And hey, even at the end of the third quarter, it's 24-14. Now that's still two scores. Portland State's not going to come back down two scores to Montana State, but that's three quarters of, relatively speaking, hanging with Montana State. You call that a win if you're the Vikings. Quarterback Dante Sacheret, 14-25 through the air, 105 yards, two picks. But if you've been watching the show, you know Sacheret is not the dude that you want throwing 25 times, probably more than Bruce Barnum wants Sacheret throwing. He's an okay thrower, but he's also a threat on the ground. That's kind of what justifies him playing on the ground. Sacheret, 16 carries, 83 yards and two touchdowns. Additionally, Quincy Craig on the ground for Portland State, 18 carries, 60 yards. Top receiving target, Quincy Craig. You just heard that in the running room too. Four catches for 49 yards. So takeaway for Portland State is obviously this was a good showing for the Vikings to keep it competitive for three quarters and change. Losing turnover margin 2-0 when having a 9-minute edge in time of possession, 34 minutes to 25 and change for Montana State. I maybe wish that you get a little more out of that, but Portland State is miles away from Montana State. This is a good showing. This is the type of showing of the Vikings that's going to make other mid-level Big Sky teams maybe feel a little bit anxious. Like if I'm a Montana Grizzly, I am a little bit more concerned about this Portland State game heading out. If I'm Idaho, I don't play Portland State, and it's great news because I don't have to cover another Portland State game on Tubbs of the Club. So that's the big winner here. But the Vikings showing that they're not bottom three in the conference, sure. Again, I think they're the Mendoza line of if you beat Portland State, you are probably good. If Portland State finds a way to beat you, you probably suck. This game did nothing to really change that for me moving on from Portland State because I just can't hide this, guys. Portland State is always the least interesting team in the conference to me. At number eight, we have, to me, a more interesting team. But I think we're starting to get resolution on who Montana Grizzlies are. And here's what I think people should look at when you're talking about Montana, and you're trying to project week in, week out, how to understand these Grizzlies, where we're ignoring, you know, the fan base, we're ignoring storylines about Bobby Houck being in his contract year, which that itself, that's not a story to ignore. I think that matters for Montana more than I think preseason attention gave it. But I'd say, hey, look at Montana, pretend they're wearing NAU jerseys. How do you feel about these Grizzlies? And I think what you should feel is, look, they beat Idaho State 28-20. And talent-wise, there didn't seem to be exactly an ocean between Montana and Idaho State. So I truly think eight is probably in that eight to maybe ceiling a six range is where Montana truly finds itself in Big Sky Conference play. Maybe they've kind of figured something out offensively. Clifton McDowell started at quarterback in place of Sam Vidlak. And from what I saw in this game, Clifton McDowell clearly fits what Montana needs out of their quarterback because he can move. He's not a great passer, but in short to intermediate passes, he can be effective enough. And honestly, Sam Vidlak he's not mobile. He has a much better arm than Clifton McDowell. But if the Grizzlies O-line isn't going to give Vidlak time to get his passes off, then start Clifton McDowell and call shorter pass plays that develop more quickly. Hell, Brent Peace probably should have been doing that for Sam Vidlak already. But if this is what it takes for Montana to do that, then I suppose Grizz fans should say, hey, keep in Clifton McDowell, senior transfer. That's our guy. Looking at McDowell on the day, 13 of 20 for 160 yards and a touchdown. Sam Vidlak did play a little bit, went 3 for 3 for 30 yards. So maybe I throw an asterisk here too. Montana's O-line is the clear relative weakness of this team. And Idaho State is one of the least well-equipped teams to expose that weakness. So take today's offensive step forward. And this is a representative offensive step forward for Montana. The Grizzlies just scored. They scored 14 last week against NAU, shut out in the second half. So scoring at all in the second half is a step up. In addition to McDowell's production through the air, McDowell rushed 20 times for 66 yards and a touchdown. Eli Gilman was the number two rusher for the Grizz, 16 rushes for 51 yards and a touchdown. But hey, let's look at the play calling disparity between when Clifton McDowell is starting quarterback. We have Montana throws 25 passes. Two of those passes came on trick plays, one from Sawyer Racanelli. He threw a 15-yard touchdown, one from Travis Benham. He threw a 15-yard completion. McDowell himself threw 20 passes. Then rush attempts, Montana 51 rushes for 174 yards and two touchdowns. So that split, it's a 2-to-1 rush, 2-to-1 ratio in favor of the rush. So if Clifton McDowell is at quarterback, that's what Montana's going to do. And I think the jury has to be in based off the small sample size of Montana just needs to not do whatever the hell they thought they were doing with Sam Vidlak under center. Defensively, the Grizz force two turnovers, picking off Jordan Cook two times. The Grizz themselves turn the ball over zero times. Leading the way in the receiving room is Junior Bergen, who finally breaks 100 receiving yards, finally gets enough catches. And it's kind of weird to think that when McDowell gets the start and McDowell only throws 20 passes, much fewer than what Vidlak threw the week before, finally the team is targeting Junior Bergen. He's one of the most talented receivers in the league. It's about time the dude broke 100 yards. In the comments section, Eric Stang, I define Montana football with a Mark Twain quote, if it ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble, it's what you know for sure that just ain't so. And Eric, 100%. I think this week offensively was the right call in accepting where the talent is and not calling longer developing pass plays, putting in a little more work to not go from, you know, first and 10 to second and 13 and be behind the sticks right away. But overall, if I'm a Grizz fan, I feel happy that the team got the win. I think this might be the worst 4-1 FCS team in the history of the FCS. The Grizz do have three wins that count for the playoffs, so still got to keep that in mind. But Montana doesn't have what you'd call anything the playoff committee would call a good win. Look, we already talked Idaho State, and it was a good win for Idaho State. But Idaho State's not a playoff team. They're not going to be flirting with playoff caliber this year. So as far as building a resume, Montana with a pretty weak resume relative to three wins, but three wins are three wins. They're more than halfway. They're not yet halfway to seven, but closing in. This week, Montana is not on bye. We'll talk about their matchup in a minute. Defensively, I think it's a little bit hard to say what I would want to take away from this game if I'm a Montana Grizzly, because they look, the Bengals average 6.1 yards per pass, but they throw 47 passes, so that a lot of their passes replace rush attempts. I guess what I say is Idaho State has been a team who can put some points on the board. And anytime you hold a Big Sky team to 20 points, you probably say that was a strong defensive outing. And look, if you look at Big Sky conference stats, if your team allows 20 points in conference the entire season as your average, that's a pretty damn good defensive outing. But again, the asterisk, Idaho State is definitely a severely rebuilding team. Montana shouldn't be understood as rebuilding, but that's where the Grizz are. I think they're okay. I don't think they should make the playoffs unless they pick up a good win, even if they get to seven wins. And from my picking perspective going forward, I honestly think Montana and NAU look relatively comparable. So heading into our number, speaking of Northern Arizona, number seven, Lumberjacks. I think we have to start talking about the Lumberjacks a little differently, because we're now looking at 10 consecutive quarters of NAU not looking like a dumpster fire. The Lumberjacks beat Montana last week, 28-14. This week, traveling to Sacramento, the Lumberjacks hang in the entire game and then go down 31-30. And maybe Chris Ball truly did figure something out after halftime against Utah Tech. That's my benchmark for where those 10 quarters come from. Because we have Adam DeMonte starting at quarterback again, goes 23-33 for 196 yards, one touchdown, one pick. I'm not saying that's lighting the world on fire, because it's not. But NAU's also running the ball a bit better. Devon Starling, 21 rushes for 117 yards and two touchdowns against a good Sacramento State rush defense, against a team that's able to get penetration against opposing teams' O-lines. That's what Sacramento State tries to do defensively. Pretty solid outing overall. You know, and NAU, they outgained Sacramento State 450 yards to 418. So this was not a game where Sacramento State, like, hey, talk about the Weber State game where Weber State threw three picks. That partially explains why it was close. Sacramento State, zero turnovers. NAU was the team with the turnover on that interception from DeMonte. So truly, this was just a competitive ball game. NAU led 21-14 at halftime. And it was a one point game. So maybe this says a little bit more about Sacramento State, but from the NAU perspective, I think we just have to accept Chris Ball looks like he truly figured something out against Utah Tech. 450 yards is a solid outing against Sacramento State. So NAU, I mean, I'm not going to call them, they're not playoff or anything. That the Lumberjacks have just one win on the season. It's kind of weird to think of rating NAU above Montana, who, look, they have inverse records. Montana 4-1, although one's a D2 win. NAU's 1-4. But if I'm rating who's showing the most life, I mean, of the Big Sky Conference season, NAU has certainly been more impressive than Montana back-to-back weeks. So congrats to the Lumberjacks. In the comments section, Eric Stang saying NAU's trap and misdirection O plays are working well and tough to prep for. Yeah, dude, Eric, one of the things, glad you hit that. You know, referencing trick plays, referencing misdirection. NAU got a 59-yard pass, wasn't a touchdown, out of Chase Belcher. He's, by the way, Chase Belcher is a running back. He was the running back who had the second most carries in addition to his 59-yard pass, 9 rushes for 72 yards, and 1 touchdown long rush of 39 yards. So NAU, they're not good. But I mean, I wouldn't call them good yet, but for a couple weeks, they look competitive. They look more like your typical 500-ish in the Big Sky level team of, they do a handful of things right. They're running the ball a lot better. They're playing with a lot more energy and fire than through the first 2 weeks. So congrats to Chris Ball. We know, just like with Bobby Houck in his contract year, we know that Chris Ball is probably coaching for his life. And these last 10 quarters, NAU has looked a bit more feisty than we've seen out of the Lumberjacks, honestly, and Ball, to me, and essentially Chris Ball's entire tenure. So before we get to number 7, you want to hear from show sponsor Hughes River Expedition. Look, if you're the kind of person who's looking for a great all-inclusive week-long vacation, you want to go out on the rapids, you want to have the time of your life, have the vacation you and your family will be talking about forever, don't look past your backyard. Hughes River Expedition, they're Vandal owned and operated since 1976. And here's what they do. You want to go on a trip to see the Middle Fork of the Salmon? You want to see the Salmon River Canyons of Selway? Contact Colin. You want to go on one of their special trips, like the one to see the Perseid meteor shower, camp on pristine beaches, check out amazing white water, hike scenic trails, see wildlife you're not going to see otherwise? Get a hold of Colin. And the best thing too, their trips are all inclusive. Truly just schedule, show up. Hughes River does the rest. Give them a call, 800-262-1882, or check them out at hughesriver.com. Number 7 was NAU. My bad. Number 6, Weber State. I already talked, Weber State needed a late pick 6 to pull away from Northern Colorado in Greeley. The Weber State end, Wildcats did not look good this game. This was not your typical or stereotypical Weber State looks strong defensively, can't score game. No, this was Weber State honestly looked generically unimpressive on the day. Got to start in the offensive end. Wildcats are outgained by Northern Colorado, who, like I said earlier, Northern Colorado had outgained 0 teams on the season, to my knowledge. Northern Colorado looked like they had no route to potential wins, and Weber State gifted them potential wins. One, Kylan Weiser, I try not to rag on individual players, but Kylan Weiser, 14-29 for 201 yards and 3 picks. And Weber State does not ask Kylan Weiser to take a lot of long strikes. So one of the weird things about watching Weber is they like to run play action with Weiser and then hit tight ends for short to at best intermediate strikes, which is to say Weiser is not being asked to execute a lot of high degree of difficulty plays. The guy is just not accurate. He's not a threat on the ground. Mickey Mantle must have no confidence whatsoever in the backups to continue to stick with Weiser, who he's barely above 50% completion percentage on the season with what Weber State's trying to do offensively. I just don't think they have the talent to do RPO on the offensive side of the ball. Good news for Weber is they do have Damon Bankson, and yesterday, Chris Jackson was the leading back in the Weber State running room, 20 carries for 105 yards and 2 touchdowns. Damon Bankson, 7 rushes for 30 yards as well. So running the ball was what Weber did pretty much more effectively than throwing it against Northern Colorado, 49 rushes for 177 yards. But the turnovers through the air annihilated Weber State. And honestly, when Weber State forces 3 turnovers out of Northern Colorado through those 3 picks, you'd expect this is a walk-away win for Weber State. But now, if I'm a Wildcat fan, I left this game thinking, look, I know the story of the team that's looked like most surprisingly disappointing has been Montana. But I think truly it's a death match between Weber State and Montana for which traditional powerhouse seems to be the most disappointing this year. Weber State at least has a story of a transition year coaching and the talent that left Weber State secondary to follow Jay Hill to BYU. But Weber State's relative strength defensively is the secondary. Mickey Mentzel's an offensive-minded head coach, former offensive coordinator. And I got to say, Weber State did not look to me particularly impressive offensively. So if I'm a Wildcat fan, I'm probably thinking, I wish I had a bye week this week, like half the Big Sky does. We'll get to what they're doing this week. But I don't know, man. It's disappointing to me that if you look at, we'll talk about Sac State in a second, but virtually every team that has a new head coach this year, that's Cal Poly, Weber State, Sacramento State, they all seem, and all of them did continuity hires, you know, internally. All of them seem to have at best taken about a half step back. Weber looks like they maybe taken a bigger step back than Sacramento State, and then Cal, quantifying what Cal Poly is not worth anyone's time. So we're going to move on from that. But you know, Weber State, look at a little bit more of the layout of the game. No team dominated time of possession. It was just under 29 minutes for Weber State, just over 31 minutes for Northern Colorado. So in spite of both teams' turnovers assisted in no team having any sort of large advantage time of possession. Look at the play calling split. Weber State rushed 49 times to 29 passes. That's going to obviously, as long as Weiser is the starting quarterback, that's obviously what Weber's going to do, because no matter what you want to say about what Weber's done offensively so far, there's been no reason to look at what Mickey Mantle's doing and think, okay, Weber State's going to spread the ball and throw and try to beat teams through the air. That's just not what they're going to do. And I guess maybe the credit to Weber State here is under Jay Hill, Weber State found ways to score both through special teams and defensively. Well, that's what happened today, or that's what happened last night. Weber State wins on a pick six late in the game. Winston Reed pick six, returned 40 yards for a touchdown. Now, I will say credit to Northern Colorado. Abraham Williams, the most electric kick returner in the Big Sky, he's on Weber State. He's a cornerback too. He picked off a pass yesterday as well. He returned one kick for 19 yards. So neutralizing Abraham Williams is going to be one huge issue if teams are able to do that for Weber State, because Williams is going to be able to get them points. If teams let Williams return kicks, he's going to get points for Weber State. He's truly the best offensive weapon I believe Weber State has, and he's on special teams. But, you know, keeping him to one kick return for 19 yards, good on Northern Colorado, but that's an issue for Weber State. Moving on to number 5, UC Davis. UC Davis already hit on the Cal Poly end of this game. UC Davis wins 38-13. Land Larrison did not suit up today. He was hurt against Eastern Washington, and he did not see the field, which didn't really matter because Davis was playing Cal Poly. Miles Hastings, quarterback, goes 27-48 for 242 yards and a touchdown. Numbers a lot more in line with what you would have expected last season. On the ground, in the absence of Land Larrison, the number one, number two running back reps went first to Trent Tompkins, 12 carries for 89 yards and 2 touchdowns, and then Darian Leon Guerrero, 12 carries for 47 yards. The team overall rushed 38 times for 188 yards and three touchdowns compared to 48 passes and a touchdown from Miles Hastings. Looking at the team stats, not worth talking about Cal Poly, but look, Davis dominated this game, 430 yards to 211 allowed. They were up at the end of the third quarter, 31-7. So this game was not really competitive. It was 24-7 at the half. No real moment in this game where the result was in doubt for Cal Poly. You might say the style points Davis picked up in this win were not what you might expect, you know, considering like Portland State hanging almost 60 on the Mustangs last week. But, you know, I think Davis is still kind of finding their footing. Having Land Larison out on the ground is a pretty big deal. Trent Tompkins is a solid backup. He's also a pass catching threat, but Land Larison being out, he's probably looks like he's the second best running back in the Big Sky behind Anthony Woods so far. So that's a big loss for Davis. I have Cal Poly number 12. I think every team who plays Cal Poly is going to look pretty good, which means your defensive takeaways against Cal Poly, not necessarily that helpful unless you're surrendering yards to Cal Poly. Davis stopped Cal Poly from rushing. Sweet. So does everyone. Davis stopped Cal Poly from being that effective through the air with their backup quarterback, Bo Kelly. Sweet. That describes every team in the Big Sky. So moving on from Davis, we're going to go to number four. Before we get to number four, show sponsor Tap the Keg. It's going to be October 13th at the Dan O'Brien Track and Field Complex in Moscow, Idaho. That is the Friday before University of Idaho homecoming against Montana. So if you're going to be in Moscow that weekend, you better get to Tap the Keg. It's essentially Idaho's version of Oktoberfest. You have a whole bunch of Oktoberfest inspired food, vendors, a ton of beers, ton of seltzers, ton of ciders. It's just going to be a kick-ass event, guys. It was fantastic last year. It's going to be better this year. Get your tickets at go.uidaho.edu/tap the keg. It's also linked in the description of the episode. Moving on to number four, Eastern Washington. Now, this was a team that I think there's a little bit more to talk about because, look, Eastern hosts University of Idaho in Cheney. Very late, virtually no notice in terms of media coverage, unless you are hashtag only Tubbs member, you got early notice that Kikoa Vesperis, starting quarterback for Eastern, leading passer in the Big Sky, did not suit up for the game against Idaho. Eastern went with, now this is where at this when the first snap goes out in the game, it's unclear what Eastern's going to do quarterback wise because their number two quarterback, Michael Wortham, he's a running quarterback. He also returns kicks for Eastern. He is obviously not a guy. I know he's theoretically number two. He's not actually their number two quarterback. He's been taking snaps under center. His role did not really change. Starting quarterback for Eastern was Jared Taylor. So what did we get out of Jared Taylor? Well, the dude did not pass particularly effective. He was 10 of 23 for 92 yards and a touchdown. Wortham himself was 3 of 5 for 34 yards and a touchdown. So relative to not that much volume, they got some touchdowns, but accrued very few yards. And as a team, Eastern sub 500 throwing the ball. But Jared Taylor, he put in a pretty good effort against Idaho on the ground. 22 carries for 121 yards and two touchdowns. Wortham added 5 carries for 54 yards and a touchdown. So from the quarterback position or the theoretical quarterback position, Eastern passed 28 times, but rushed 27 times. They gained 126 yards on those 28 pass plays. Then on the ground, they gained 175 yards and three touchdowns from the combination of Taylor and Wortham. So the takeaway for Eastern here is until Kikoa Vesperis is back, this is probably a run-heavy team. And overall, Eastern rushed 42 times for 226 yards and three touchdowns. Really not a bad effort at all on the ground against number five at the time, University of Idaho. This was a game that was 21-21 at halftime. Eastern trailed by just three at the end of the third quarter, which would have been 24-21 at the end of the third quarter. Idaho did pull away, led by 16 late. Eastern did get a touchdown, a 2-point conversion to make it an 8-point game. But overall, if I'm an Eastern fan, I'm more than happy with the result this team got, especially with the backup quarterback. Idaho is a top five team, a non-Portland State top five team. They deserve to be a top five team. And man, Eastern, I was at the game. I was impressed with Eastern. This is a fringe playoff team to me. They're still not a great defensive team in particular on the ground, a little bit sneakily good in the secondary, but Idaho abused Eastern on the ground. We'll talk more about that in the Idaho end, but the Eagles themselves, very strong on the ground. Overall, look, they gave up 491 yards to Idaho. So I'm not going to pretend this was some apex defense effort from Eastern, but this was competitive for the entire game. Idaho looked like they were going to just murder Eastern out the gate when they scored their first touchdown in five plays after receiving the first kick. But Eastern buckled down right away. They bullied their way on the ground to keeping this game close. And with a backup quarterback, that is pretty dang good. So for Eastern, my takeaway is that look, they can't defend on the ground against better teams. But Idaho is a very strong rushing team. Idaho is going to beat lots of teams on the ground. But Eastern, they did what they had to do to keep it competitive. You know they need Kakoa Vesperis back in spite of how close this was. And maybe this was a better matchup for Eastern with the surprise of the run-heavy approach that Idaho obviously did not prep for. But they need Vesperis back. If Eastern's going to make the playoffs, I don't think they're going to be able to do it as a run-heavy team if teams are going to be able to scheme for it. In the comment section, Captain 58, Eastern Washington needs Kakoa to make the playoffs. They got to go 5 or 6 to get to 7 wins and still have Montana State on the schedule. So Captain 58 brings up a good point. I want to talk about the Eastern Washington schedule because I already hit the takeaways. Everyone knew Eastern Washington was not a good rush defense team, but they look a little better than last year. And they're a solid, they're like a mid-level big sky secondary. Eastern's not going to win games because they're elite defensively, but they're certainly better than a good amount of the conference on the defensive side of the ball. Eastern's going to win games because they can score. Aaron Best is a good offensive coach. I mean, Aaron Best has done a great job rebuilding Eastern from last season. Talking about their schedule, because Eastern is one of the teams where we can talk playoffs. Eastern's through that very rough first 5 weeks, sitting at 2-3 with, at this point, a good win at UC Davis. Weber is now set to potentially have some real momentum. Eastern. The Eagles are off this week, but on the 14th, they're going to travel to Idaho State. Then in the ensuing weeks, they've got Weber State, Portland State, Cal Poly. If Eastern can go 4-0 in that stretch, final 2 weeks, they've got at Montana State, then hosting NAU. So that's their route to potentially getting 7 wins is they'll pick up a loss probably to Montana State because virtually everyone's going to pick up a loss to Montana State. But I mean, if I'm picking these games right now, look, Eastern's number 4 in our power rankings, well over Weber State. And that seems like the right call for sure out of those two teams. So I think on paper, scrolling through the rest of the season, Eastern's going to be favored in probably every one of these games except Montana State and, you know, throw an asterisk again about Northern Arizona, just depending on how these 10 solid quarters that the Lumberjacks have played materialize over the rest of the season. But, you know, you can look at Idaho as a benchmark for a second. Sacramento State was closer to Idaho last week than Eastern Washington with their backup quarterback was this week. But I don't think there's a gigantic amount of daylight between Sacramento State and Eastern Washington. And at this point, Sacramento State's going, who we'll talk about in a second, they're probably understood as penciled into the playoffs. So that's who, to me, Eastern Washington is. Their fringe playoff schedules made it a bit rough for them to build that resume, but they have a route to the playoffs, guys. If Eastern can win 5 out of their last 6, which is entirely feasible, they only have like 2 or 3 games that to me are even questionable. Your Eagles are looking at a very, very nice 1-year turnaround compared to last season. So congrats to Eastern. The game was 95-ish% capacity at Roos, just under 8,400 and 8,700 seat place. My other takeaway is talking about Eastern. Our Tuna Alta here looked pretty good on the ground. I've talked on this show saying I felt like Justice Jackson was the more effective rusher. That was certainly not the case against Idaho. We had Altier, 10 rushes for 48 yards, you know, not lighting the world on fire, but solid. He's their bruising back, change of pace back, and he was effective. Justice Jackson, 4 rushes for 9 yards. Do want to give a little bit more love to Justice Jackson for a 34-yard touchdown reception he had, which I believe he was a recipient of a screen pass. Justice Jackson caught a screen pass, essentially a 2-yard pass, and he took 32 more yards. So anyway, congrats, Eagles. It was a good week. If I'm an Eagle, I'm happy. Moving on to number 3, Sacramento State. Sacramento State. Now, if I were just to gauge your temperature of how impressed are you after this week, Sacramento State, Eastern, it'd probably be pretty easy to lean towards Eastern, even though Eastern picked up the loss, which is to say NAU Sacramento State was a lot closer than I would have picked. I did pick Sacramento State to win, but I didn't spend 1 second thinking this game would be close. But the Hornets pick up the narrow win over the Wildcats. Caden Bennett, starting quarterback for the Hornets, goes 18 to 27, 257 yards and a touchdown. Also rushed 22 times for 76 yards. Marcus Fulcher, number one running back, was out this game for Sacramento State. In his absence, Ezra Molini led the team in carries, who were not Caden Bennett, for 11 carries for 47 yards. But this was the Caden Bennett show, guys. Between 27 pass attempts and 22 rush attempts, that's just under 50 times that Coach Andy Thompson said he was going to trust Caden Bennett to handle offensive duties for Sacramento State. And they came away with just enough, gained 418 yards on the day. No issues with turnovers. That's two consecutive games. And I know the Hornets had a turnover against Idaho. It was last play desperation in what most people would call a functional sense. That's two consecutive weeks the Hornets have avoided turnovers. Caden Bennett, again, he's going to give teams chances. Most quarterbacks do give teams a chance or two to pick them off. Caden Bennett, when I've watched, he always has a few that seem a little bit more egregious than a couple guys, but Caden Bennett's been solid. He's a top half of the league quarterback, not a top 3 or 4 quarterback in the Big Sky, but he's been effective enough for Sacramento State. And yeah, there we go. So the Hornets now sit at 4-1. You'd have to say they're in the driver's seat for the playoffs. Their only loss is to Idaho. That's not a bad loss. The Hornets also have a good win over Stanford. Yeah, Stanford sucks, but the Pac-12 win is a Pac-12 win in the FCS. So takeaways here, I guess, you know, if I'm Sacramento State, the thing I'm a little anxious about, maybe two things. Sacramento State has been steady offensively. They scored 31 points this game. In their 4 games, the least amount that the Hornets have scored was 30. That was at Stanford. The most they scored was 38 at Nichols. So very steady. They're going to get their 4-ish touchdowns and maybe a couple field goals. That's how they've been for, again, we're 5 weeks into season. At this point, that's essentially what teams are. I may be a little concerned that Sacramento State was outgained by Northern Arizona. I mean, Northern Arizona, like I said earlier, they've looked better. But Northern Arizona certainly, they're not in the same class as Sacramento State to me, from what I've seen for most of the season. So if I'm a Hornet fan, maybe I'm saying the loss, maybe there's a little bit of lost confidence after that Idaho loss that just made this game more or less a trap game, you might say, for Sacramento State, but the Hornets still picked up the win. So I don't know. I feel like after these last 2 weeks, it's been pretty clear that Sacramento State is not in the top 2 of the Big Sky, but number 3 in the Big Sky is a pretty good place to be. They're in the driver's seat for the playoffs. Look, they still get to the quarterback. They still are typically rush it a bit more than they pass, you know, about 1.5 rushes per pass attempt this week against NAU. That math, like a little bit different, not that much different. Team rushed 47 times, passed 27 times, but they also were without their number one running back. I guess what I'm also looking for out of Sacramento State is Marshall Martin, All-American tight end, just hasn't really taken off this year. I mean, we're 5 games in. Now, he did miss some games due to injuries, but 8 catches for 39 yards on the season. That's 4.9 yards per catch. That's not what you would have expected out of Martin so far. I mean, against NAU, 1 catch for 3 yards, that's it. His biggest game so far, 4 catches for 17 yards against Stanford. No touchdowns on the season for Martin. I'm expecting the dude's going to pick up his production at some point because I just can't I can't imagine that the reason Marshall's not getting any touches is that teams like NAU is just way too strong defensively for the best, maybe the best NFL prospect in the Big Sky to get open. It's been weird that there's been this much difficulty getting him and Caden Bennett on the exact same page, but that's the story that I'm looking to, that I'm kind of following. If I'm Sacramento State, he's easily the most talented tight end in the Big Sky. So that, okay, we have a have to hit the comment section. Captain 58, this is old, says Weber's rushing might be a bad matchup for Eastern. It'll be very interesting to watch the Eagles this season. Every game will have high stakes. Then talking about Sacramento State, Martin Heemstra, what, am I a D1 tight end right now? No, but your first name does match a D1 tight end, Martin. So thank you for the question. Moving on, we're going to get to the top two. Before we hit that our top two teams, show new sponsor, Walk On Apparel, guys. Look, if you're a Tubbs the Club listener or a Big Sky Conference podcast rankings listener, there's a special coupon just for you for Walk On Apparel. Enter capital TUBS at checkout, save 15%. Walk On, they are doing great, great apparel for Idaho in particular, but they do other schools too. They got Utah Tech. But you got, if you want to get more Walk-On apparel from other schools, we need the schools who Walk-On already make stuff for to support them. So, hey, Weber fans, get on top of this. Idaho fans have already been great, so great that Walk-On has just recently released a new Idaho design. It's Schoolhouse Rock inspired Joe Vandal with IDAHO Idaho, Idaho, go, go, go on the chest. So go to Walk-On, buy some shirts, enter capital TUBS Tubbs at checkout, save 15%. Speaking of Idaho, guys, number two, Idaho Vandals. We just talked about the Eastern end of the Idaho's 44-36 win. The Idaho end is the Vandals struggled on the ground, defensively on the ground with Eastern's run heavy attack. It took the Vandals about 2.5 to around 3/4 to get in control of what Eastern was trying to do offensively. But offensively, look, Idaho chose to not punch in a touchdown at the end of the game. That would have made this a 50. Idaho would have gotten 51 had they chosen to, instead of taking victory formation. So Idaho 100%, they were murderous on the ground against Eastern Washington. In particular, the story of this game, Anthony Woods, 24 rushes for 183 yards. The number should actually be about 215. He recovered a fumble snap that went over quarterback Giovanni McCoy's head, which took about 20 yards off of Anthony Woods' overall total. He didn't lose those. He saved a possession for Idaho and lost 20 yards. So honestly, the dude rushed 23 times for about 215 yards on a day, but 5 touchdowns. In addition to Woods, Nick Romano, number two running back for Idaho, 18 rushes for 129 yards. On the game, Idaho rushes 49 times for 363 yards. Look, I talked before about how Eastern was effective running the ball 42 times for 226 yards for the Eagles and 3 touchdowns. Well, Idaho was 49 rushes for 363 yards. So on 7 more carries, the Vandals had 140 additional yards and 2 touchdowns. Made up for Giovanni McCoy having his roughest game of the season. McCoy went 8 of 18 for 128 yards, 1 touchdown, and 1 pick. That's the first time we've seen Giovanni McCoy below 50% completion percentage. Don't expect him to live there very long because McCoy's a very good quarterback. But the downside for Idaho is times he dropped back. Giovanni was under duress a little bit. You got to say the offensive line wants to be better in pass protection. But the offensive line for Idaho on the ground is getting much better every single week. Yes, Eastern's not the best rushing defense in the league, but the Vandals abused Eastern on the ground. So in spite of Eastern having a pretty strong effort, especially without Kikoa Vesperis, the Vandals still beat the hell out of them overall, especially offensively. 44 points could have been 51. When your quarterback is at 50% completion sub 50% completion percentage, yeah, we call that a game. So Idaho can annihilate teams on the ground. We already know they have some of the most talented receivers in the league. Hayden Hatton, 3 catches for 41 yards. Jermaine Jackson, 3 catches, 43 yards. Their stats aren't exploding yet, but part of that is because Anthony Woods is having himself a season, guys. He's had 3 games rushing over 100 yards on the year. The guy right now is sitting at 90 carries for 565 yards, 9 touchdowns. That's good for 6.3 yards per carry. And there's no D2 BS pump up games on the schedule. Weakest opponent was Lamar week 1, 13 rushes for 138 yards. Well, that's not his best rushing game. Honestly, this week against Eastern to me was his best, that 24 rushes for 183 yards, AKA 23 for about 215. So takeaway for Idaho. Yeah, it's kind of the inverse of Northern Colorado where say, hey, bad teams find ways to lose. Good teams find ways to win. Passing game just wasn't working as well for Idaho. So they leaned heavy on the ground game because they should have. That's what Evans told them they should do. Defensively, it did take a bit of time for Idaho to adjust to the running quarterbacks. You got to, looking at Idaho's schedule, you're probably only bothered with that fact against Montana State from here to the end of the year. But, you have to expect DC Rob Orich. He's going to feel like the team has a lot of improvement to do between now and October 28th. The Vandals I'm not concerned as a Vandal about Idaho's games heading into Montana State on October 28th. So look, there's a chance that October 28th is a de facto or unofficial Big Sky Conference championship game when Montana State visits Idaho. But the Vandals overall, they're strong on both sides of the ball. They've got some holes, but they're a top five team. There are a lot of ways Idaho can beat teams this year. And there's a lot of ways Idaho's going to be able to really punish teams, whether it's on the ground or through the air offensively, man. This team is going to score some points. And that's what they did against Eastern Washington. Final team to talk about, number one, Montana State. Before you hit Montana State, Captain 58 says, Woods, just wow, electric on Saturday. Yes, he was. Final team we got to talk about, still number one, Montana State. Already hit the Bengals. Bengals hosted top five Portland State. Did so without Tommy Mellott. Sean Chambers is the only guy in the Big Sky who's competing with Anthony Woods for Big Sky Player of the Week awards. I think Anthony Woods should get it, the rushing for over 200 yards and 5 touchdowns. But Sean Chambers had himself a day too. Starting quarterback, Chambers goes 14 to 21 for 143 yards, throws 3 touchdowns, also rushed 4 times for 118 yards and a touchdown, including an 88-yard touchdown. On the ground, Jared White led Montana State with 10 carries for 102 yards, long 51. Overall, the Bobcats rush 30 times for 313 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's over 10 yards per carry. It's honestly, to me, it's astounding that the Bobcats even passed as much as they did, because you're averaging 10 yards a carry. Good God, that's bludgeoning teams. Overall, Bobcats gained 456 yards, give up 311 to Portland State. Game was, it was closer than you might expect as a Bobcat, as covered already. It was 24 to 14 at the end of the third quarter. It was 14 to 17 at the end of the first half. But Montana State wins by more than 2 touchdowns. So not much cause for concern. And the Bobcat defense picked off 2 passes, man. We talk about the offense for Montana State, talk about the weird running stuff with both quarterbacks, talk about the offensive line. Montana State is one of the most talented defensive teams in the league. There's a reason Montana State is top 5. I mean, they'll probably move up to number 2. With a couple losses that we saw in the FCS top 5. But the Vandals and the Bobcats, in their own ways, look like they are head and shoulders above the Big Sky. I think right now you'd have to pencil in Montana State above Idaho. Both of them have relatively impressive resumes. Idaho has more, if we remove who we're talking about and just say resume 1, resume 2, Idaho has objectively a better playoff resume right now, as in the Vandals have 3 quality wins. I don't think the Bobcats necessarily have a quality win at this point. Portland State honestly may be the best Bobcat win of the season. The most impressive outing for Montana State was they should have beat South Dakota State week 2, but did not. So, or maybe you say last week shutting out Weber. Okay, hey, there's at this point, hey, Weber State is still ranked, so my bad. Montana State does have a quality win, but again, that's 1-3 so far. But if I'm looking at the actual tape comparing the teams, Montana State looks like a tough team to beat. I mean, obviously, when Idaho and Montana State play, it's going to be fun as hell, and it's going to be must watch Big Sky football. But I think you'd have to say right now, Montana State seems like they're a little bit more well-rounded overall on both sides of the ball. Montana State obviously is not the threat to pass that Idaho is, and that's not remotely close, but the strength of the Montana State line does let you understand that math a little bit different. And look, Montana State's rebuild is in year six or seven when you talk about from Jeff Choate to Brent Vegan. So things have been humming for Montana State for a while. Recruiting, it's tough to do much better than where Montana State is. If you're Idaho, you probably say, hey, give Eck another year or so, and things like the pass protection are going to get better. Rush protection's already getting much better for Idaho anyway in 2 years. But both these teams, they're top five for sure. Montana State looks like they look like a team you might pencil into Final Four of the FCS playoffs as worst case scenario. They're just humming on both sides of the ball, guys. They are suffocating defensively. They can force turnover. They force turnovers as well in a way Idaho has not been doing quite yet. But they're both juggernauts. They're both at the top of the Big Sky because those two teams are clearly the class of the conference thus far, 5 weeks into the season. So that's going to be the show today. Support Tubbs at the Club at patreon.com/Tubbs at the Club to join the hashtag Only Tubbs Discord, which if you're a Vandal, it's the single best online chat you're going to find for Idaho. You can also support the show by hitting that subscribe button on YouTube. It costs you nothing. And the more subscribers we get, the quicker it is that YouTube has to at least think about paying us some money. So help us out, dudes. Thanks for tuning in. Tubbs at the Club will be on regularly scheduled Tuesday. I'll be back next week for the power rankings, but actually before full disclosure is I change up. Going to run through the week's games real quick. I referenced that we had some bye weeks. Montana State, Idaho State, Eastern Washington, Northern Colorado, Sacramento State, and Portland State are all off this week. So we got a much thinner Big Sky slate, which will give me an excuse to just do midterm episodes for the Big Sky a week from today. The three games we're looking at are Montana travels to UC Davis, Idaho gets a bye week at Cal Poly, and then NAU at Weber State. So honestly, two of those three games have some intrigue, whether Northern Arizona is for real and whether Weber State can turn it around after what we saw about at Northern Colorado. That to me is something to watch. UC Davis, they're picking up wins, but they haven't looked that great in any given week versus Montana, who they're picking up wins and have certainly not looked that great any given week. Those two teams, I think we're going to learn something about Davis and Montana. Hot take. I think we already learned what we're going to learn about Montana. I don't think they responded that well to the adversity of last week with a narrow win over Idaho State. I think they're just not that good. So maybe you're watching that game to get a better idea of should we be talking UC Davis playoff or should we be talking UC Davis? They're all right. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. I will see you guys next week at your regular scheduled time. And we're going to let one of Martin's videos play us away whenever I can find it. See you next week. Go Vandals.